Shea Serrano joins us. He's a staff writer at The Ringer and a New York Times bestselling author. He's also the host of the No Skips Music Podcast. That's appropriate because Shea's latest book is called Hip Hop and Other Things. It's the third and final book in Shea's and Other Things series. You alphas with elephant memories may remember that Shea joined us to talk about his second book in the series, Movies and Other Things. We always have a blast when Shea stops by. In fact, one of our biggest regrets is that we never had him on to talk about the first book in the trilogy, Basketball and Other Things. But hey, we weren't on the air yet. And there's no use crying over missed opportunities. To quote Meatloaf, now don't be sad, because 2 out of 3 ain't bad. Hip Hop and Other Things again features the fantastic illustrations of Arturo Torres. And it wouldn't be a Shea Serrano book without the surreal, Serrano-esque, thought experimentish questions that Shea poses and answers. Shea joined us from his Texas home to chat about some of his favorite stories from the world of hip hop and to tell us why he saved this book for last.
I've been really excited about this book in particular because when we started this series out, I'm talking about me and Arturo Torres, the illustrator. He's based out of Dallas, Texas. When we started it ahead of time, we said, hey, what's the one we want to end on? We knew we were going to do an And Other Things series. We said, well, we want to do 3 of them. Let's pick 3 things. Movie, we love movies, we love basketball, we love rap. Which of those do we want to be like the anchor? The big like finale, you know, you got to finish strong. You don't want a Godfather 3 the situation. You know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying. No, you don't want that.
You want a John Wick 3 the situation, like a big flurry.
Absolutely.
The third one. And so we say, okay, well, this is like, we really, really care a great, great deal about rap. So let's end on that one. So we made that decision 6 years ago in 2015 when we started working on all these. So I've been really excited about this one. That's why it's number one for me, just because we knew we were going to land here.
Yeah. You say in the dedication of this new book that rap is best listened to in the car. So I have to ask, what was the best car or stereo or song or moment that makes you think that?
This is going to be such a like goofy, I don't even know, comparison, but here's the answer. I'm just going to say the answer, and then you can figure out all the rest of the pieces.
Thank you.
But when I was 17, I got my first car, like a car I was proud of. It was a little tiny Hyundai. It was like $2,000. My dad bought it for me. We went to one of those little, like, off the side of the road dealerships where they're just like, it's kind of sketchy, but not really. And I found a little red car, a little red Hyundai. And I was like, Dad, can I get this one? And it was within the price range, $2,000. So I got it, and it had a CD player in it. And I played in there the album Harlem World by Mace.
So one thing about Harlem World, we all got dough. 98 Tahoe, Tommy and a Roscoe. Case I'm ever chased by Donnie Brasco.
Why you over there looking at me? Why my girl standing here?
Come on.
I just felt like I was the king of the world while I was listening to that album in that car, riding around on my own for the first time. You know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying. In 1997, Missy Elliott released her album Supa Dupa Fly. But perhaps more importantly, she released the video for her song The Rain. This video basically created a template for rap videos of the era. As you point out, Missy's famous air-blown outfit that she wears was more than a fashion statement. What's the story behind that?
Okay, so the quickest version of this story here is prior to becoming the mega superstar that Missy was, she preferred to stay in the shadows, to be in the background. She wanted to be like a songwriter, producer, like that, work in that world. So that's what she was doing at the beginning of her career. And she wrote a song for Raven Simone, the child actor slash rapper slash just all around entertainer. The song called That's What Little Girls Are Made Of. And she, and I say she, I'm talking about Missy, had a small feature in the song. But then when they shot the video for it, they replaced Missy in there. They told her after the fact, after they'd already recorded it, hey, there's like a thinner woman with lighter skin, and she was doing Missy's parts, and they told her that she just didn't have the right look to be in the video. And this is, of course, a thing that like had to, it broke Missy's heart. She talked about it with the Guardian in 2001. I think she says something like, they said I could sing, I could write, but that I looked wrong. And that was like the lowest thing you could say. So that happens in 1993, right? So she's in the background for all of this stuff. And then she like parlays her growing reputation into this really interesting deal with Elektra Records, where they were going to give her her own imprint, but they said in exchange, you have to give us one album, like one Missy album. This is Sylvia Roan, the genius record executive. And Missy's like, okay, cool. She makes the album. And the song, the first single for it, the first video for it is for the song The Rain.
Me, I'm super fly, super duper fly, super duper fly. Me, I'm super fly, super duper fly, super duper fly.
Which is probably like the iconic Missy Elliott song. And it starts out with her, like the first image you see of her, and then like the everlasting Missy Elliott image is her in the inflated black leather suit. It's like, this is Hype Williams directing it, so he's using the fisheye lens. And so there she is, like, she's exaggerating all of the things that they said were wrong about her in the beginning. You know, her size, her color, her shape, her everything. And she's like, no, this is like, here's a bigger version of all of it, all while she is saying over and over again how like cool she is. I'm super duper fly, super duper fly, super. She says it 10 times in a row, like it's not an accident. And from that moment forward, everybody knew like, oh, this is a special artist that we're watching here. It's a really a great moment in rap by itself, but then you learn that part of it and you're like, oh, this meant even more than you knew at the time. Nobody knew this in 1997. There wasn't the internet to like find out all this information. I didn't know about it until like a couple of years ago.
Good for her. That's really great that she did that. Yeah. One of the most intriguing careers of any hip hop artist in history has to be Lauryn Hill's. After back-to-back multi-platinum albums, she essentially retired from music. What do you think Lauryn Hill's legacy is to hip hop and to music in general?
She's the one responsible for like blurring what the lines were between R&B and hip hop. She had this really great quote, I know this sounds crazy, but sometimes I treat rapping like singing, and other times I treat singing like rapping, but still, it's all done within the context of hip-hop. And so you hear her say that, and you're like, oh, okay, this is exactly right, because this is an answer that when you hear it, it's both absolute, but also completely open to interpretation. And that's where Lauryn Hill fits in that conversation. You have to have somebody like that.
Lauryn is only human. Don't think I haven't been through the same predicament. Let it sit inside your head like a million women in Philly pen. It's silly when girls sell their souls because of sin. Look at where you be in. Hair weaves like Europeans. Fake nails done by Koreans. Come again.
Do you have a favorite Lauryn Hill song?
Oh, I have like 10 favorite Lauryn Hill songs.
Yeah, that's what I figured. It's tough to narrow it down to one.
Yeah, if we're gonna pick one, the very first one that I think of, this is probably not the right answer, but the very first one that I think of is the song To Zion, which is what she was singing about her unborn child. People were telling her after she got pregnant, this is the beginning of her career, hey, you should get an abortion, this is going to ruin your career. That song, she's singing a song to her unborn child.
Everybody told me to be smart. Look at your career, they said. Lauryn, baby, use your head. But instead, I chose to use my heart. Now the joy of my world is in Zion.
Way that she sings that on the hook, when you hear it, just knowing what it was and what it meant, it's so extremely powerful. As I'm talking, I'm realizing right now that the stuff that I'm always drawn to is when you tell a person, hey, don't do that thing, and then they're like, no, you know what, I'm gonna do it, and I'm gonna do it better than you ever thought it could be done. That's what I like right now.
And you'll be pleased to know, Shay, I just heard from our judges, and that is indeed the correct answer. That is the right answer. Well done.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. In 1994, Nasir Jones, better known as Nas, forever changed the rap landscape when he released his debut album, Illmatic. The album is rap royalty and has been studied and written about, perhaps most famously, in Michael Eric Dyson's book, Born to Use Mics. Why is Illmatic so influential?
Number one, it's just Nas is maybe the greatest writer in rap ever, and this is when he did the best writing of his career. So you have that going on. Plus also, this was 1994, which is really when rap is taking off and becoming this gigantic juggernaut. This is right around when Tupac is about to start popping up, and Biggie, and you know, Snoop had just come out in 93, Dr. Dre in 92, Wu-Tang Clan in 93 as well. Like, all of these great, great voices are coming out. Jay-Z is about to start bubbling out. Nas shows up and he puts this album out, and it is at once an album that plants a flag in a moment in time and says, this is what rap sounds like in New York in 1994 at its highest level. But then also, it like peaked forward as well. This is what hopefully rap will sound like for the rest of time. Or, you know, if you go 100 years in the future, this is still going to sound like it's ahead of that. It was doing so many different things. It doesn't hurt that Nas is exceptionally cool. I'm like Sly Stone and Cobra, packing like a roster in the weed spot. Vocals are squeezed, Glocks and CZs drop, though they need not to sneak. My poetry's deep, I never fail. Nas's rap should be locked in a cell. It ain't hard to tell. It certainly doesn't hurt that he's like a handsome, insightful person. It was like all of the things you wanted to see in a rapper and in a rap album all at once. And it came from a kid. He's in his early 20s when he does this, so seemingly out of nowhere. And he just like presents you with this brilliant piece of art. And everybody freaked out about it. And it didn't matter how much you freaked out about it or heard about it beforehand. When you got the chance to listen to it, it always was better than you thought it was going to be. You can listen to it now and it's still, we've been talking about it for a few minutes. If you play it right now, you're going to be like, oh, he didn't do near a good enough job. It just outpaces everything.
Mm-hmm. And it still does, as you mentioned. I was going to ask you that. It still sounds like it's way ahead of the curve.
Mm-hmm.
That's impressive. Two of the best albums of the last decade of any genre are Kendrick Lamar's Good Kid, Mad City and Kanye's My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. You set out to see which of these top two was not two. What was your verdict?
Yeah, out of those two albums, which of those is the best? And again, it's the same thing. You start out with a question and then you just go, okay, like, how do we pick this apart? Because it's not any fun if I'm just like, hey, what's your favorite XTC song? And then you just tell me the song. Like, that's not fun.
No.
I want you to walk me through, how did you get there? Because I have found that people are much more receptive to a result, to an answer of a question, if they know how you arrived at that thing. So if I just go, hey, Kendrick's Good Kid, Mad City is better than Kanye West's My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, they're going to be like, well, you can go to H-E double hockey sticks. I don't believe you.
Yeah.
I don't believe you. But if I walk you through how we get there, then you're, even if you don't agree with it, you're going to be like, oh, okay, well, I see how we landed here. Same way as if we flip it. If I say, hey, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy is better than Good Kid, Mad City, and you don't agree, but I can show you how we arrived there, well, then it makes for a much more interesting conversation or reading experience.
Yeah, very well said. So this is the final book in the And Other Things series, but I just want to pose a thought experiment to you, since you're very fond of thought experiments, as am I. If someone were to offer you $2 million, I don't know, $3 million, whatever dollars to write a fourth installment in the And Other Things series, what would it be about?
It would be about what idiot thought it would be a good idea to give me $3 million to rent it. It would be called that, $3 million and other things. No, you know what it would be? I think the natural thing to do here would be television and other things.
Yeah.
The TV shows are just, they're smaller versions of movies, but they're also like bigger versions of movies. You hear that so much now when you're like, whatever the new prestige TV show is, and they're like, oh, it's not 10 episodes of 30 minutes, it's like a 5-hour movie. So television and other things would probably be the one that made the most sense. Because if you can connect, it's very easy to draw a line from like basketball to hip hop. We can draw that same line from movies to television, especially now when it's just like the internet has blown up everything and all of a sudden the biggest movie stars in the world are doing. Oscar Isaac and Jessica Chastain just did a TV series together that barely anybody talked about. And it's like, well, it's Oscar Isaac and Jessica Chastain. Like, this should be the biggest thing in the world, but it's like atomized.
Yeah, and it's based on an Ingmar Bergman film, right? Scenes from a Marriage.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's
what more
exactly
do you want?
What it is.
Exactly. So what is next for you?
I don't know. All that I know is I got to figure it out in the next couple of months. That way, 2 years from now, you and I are having a new version of this conversation again. This has become my favorite tradition.
Yeah.
When I call you up and we talk about stuff, it's great.
Yeah. And then maybe within those 2 years, maybe I'll start a GoFundMe page and raise the money to get you to write the television and other things. Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully. Shea Serrano, thank you for joining us once again. We always enjoy talking to you, and we'll talk to you again 2 years from now about your next book. I can hardly wait. Me neither. Thank you so much, Shea. This was great.
All right, homie.
Shea Serrano is the author of Hip Hop and Other Things. We'll keep you posted if and when we're able to make television and other things happen. Fingers crossed. You can find out more about Shea, hip-hop, and loads of other things at WPR.org/Beatty.
They were not willing to compromise and try and shoehorn Tony into what a network probably would have wanted from him, which is barbecue rodeo in a parking lot.
Lori Wolever, Anthony Bourdain's longtime assistant and co-author, joins us in just a moment. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.